531.
Now, for our weekly wrap-up of Global Politics with Dr. Stephen Hoadley, Associate Professor of Politics and International Relations at the University of Auckland's Faculty of Arts. Good morning, Dr. Stephen. And this morning, why don't we begin with an update from our last week's discussion of Afghanistan. What's the latest?
Yes, good morning, Brian. Some good news and some not so good news. The good news is this nation of 40 million people at least has one president rather than two. The challenger, Abdullah, has agreed to chair a National Reconciliation Council. And so there's a sort of power-sharing arrangement between the elected president and the almost elected president. So at least there's some sort of unity in Kabul as they try to combat the radical challenge from the Taliban. Now, the bad news is, as you probably saw in the news, a group of extremists entered a maternity hospital and killed nurses and children. And then another group bombed a funeral. In other words, the violence continues in Afghanistan. Who is to blame? Well, the United States has made an agreement with the Taliban. If the Taliban leaves the United States forces alone, the U.S. forces will gradually draw out. But now they're blaming a different insurgent group, the Islamic State group. And this puts the spotlight on the fact that there's not one but three different insurgencies in Afghanistan. There's the Taliban, then there's the ISIS, and then there's the old Al-Qaeda, the original insurgent group that staged the attacks on New York back in 2001. So the troubles for Afghanistan continue. We'll no doubt talk about it. And I just wanted to finish off with a tribute to the New Zealand Defense Force. For over 10 years, the New Zealand Defense Force posted a provincial reconciliation team in a province. And in that province, there was relative peace. The troops did a great job. More than 1,000 rotated in and out of that province, working well with the United States and other partner governments and with the Afghan government, and drew out finally turning over the authority to the Afghans themselves. So this is a bright spot in New Zealand's overseas deployments. It was successful. Unfortunately, six New Zealand service personnel lost their lives. But by and large, it was regarded as a well-run organization, one which achieved its goals. New Zealand then withdrew with honor. And I just wanted to remind listeners that New Zealand has done some useful work and continues to give aid and, in a small way, advisory services to the government of Afghanistan.
China in the world spotlight light again, Dr. Stephen. Is New Zealand at risk?
Yes. Well, this is the politicization of health care. This is the World Health Assembly, and it's become not just a place to talk about how to combat the silent enemy, the virus, but also a place where the United States and China are putting very different views into the group. The United States accuses China of originating the virus, of covering up the original stages of the virus, and it accuses the World Health Assembly or the World Health Organization of being a little bit too slow and a little bit too solicitous of China to report to the world that this was a serious challenge. On the other side, the Chinese say, look, we have done a marvelous job in cleaning up and in keeping the deaths down. The United States has more deaths than China. It's the United States that's the problem by spreading rumors and by dividing the group. Well, where does New Zealand stand? New Zealand stands more or less with the United States without actually saying so. New Zealand does not accuse China by name. New Zealand does not say we are supporting the United States by name. But New Zealand has said two things through Winston Peters, our foreign minister. Number one, New Zealand would support an inquiry by the World Health Organization or an inquiry about the World Health Organization to get independent facts. Where did the virus originate and what was done or not done to restrain the spread of this virus? That is, who's to blame for letting it get out of control? And it still is out of control. It's going through Africa and South America at the present time with disastrous consequences. So we're far from over it, even though New Zealand has come out on the other side relatively unscathed. And the second thing that Winston Peters has said is that Taiwan, a nation of 22 million, had a very good record of curbing the virus. They should actually be an observer in the World Health Assembly. Now, China violently objects to this, saying Taiwan is a province of China. It should come in under the Chinese flag. It is not an independent country. Well, we disagree. Taiwan, the Republic of China, was born in 1911. It predates the current People's Republic of China. It's a democratic country, a free market country, a country with lots of good environmental policies. Of course, it should be one of the team of nearly 200 governments that combat medical problems, all working together. We wonder, is China going to retaliate against New Zealand for, first of all, supporting the inquiry in which China will have to defend itself? Because I think we all agree the virus did originate in China, and China was a little bit slow to report. And secondly, will China retaliate against New Zealand for supporting Taiwan's observer status, not membership, only observer status, so it doesn't really violate China's one China policy or one China, two systems policy? So we'll see where this goes. Winston Peters is optimistic. He thinks that he's got a good relationship with the foreign minister, Wang Yi, and with Madam Wu Shi, the ambassador here in New Zealand, and that we're going to be okay. It'll be other countries like the United States and Australia that will get most of Chinese wrath.
From one global superpower to another, U.S. politics, this new term, boogaloo, but more than a lively American music, right, Dr. Stephen?
Well, Brian, maybe in your archive you can find a little boogaloo music for us. It's pretty amusing, lively stuff, but it's got a serious undertone. This is the dark side of the World Wide Web. This is where conspiracy theories proliferate. This is an anti-government, violent movement run by people who love their guns, and they're afraid that the current government is going to restrict their right to carry firearms. Some of them have advocated violence against officials, against government. They are somewhat anarchistic, and they spread their gospel through the Internet. And it's through the Internet that various researchers have done some very clever detective work and found that they use certain memes and certain jokes and certain, like, shirts, like Hawaiian T-shirts over their military fatigues as they carry their guns around in public gatherings. And that's where the term boogaloo comes up. Boogaloo is a kind of amusing term that covers up, or it signifies these the common interests of these various anarchistic right-wing groups to carry out their conspiracy theories against what we regard as orderly government. So we'll keep an eye on this because it could well result in violence. I would term the alleged perpetrator of the Christchurch massacre one of that, broadly speaking, one of that movement, even though he hasn't identified himself as such. But it's that stream of thinking, that vague anti-government, violent inclination that is causing a lot of terrorist actions in the United States. It was originally thought that it was a religious extremism that motivated terrorism, but in the United States and in some parts of Europe, it is right-wing ideological extremism, and maybe the Boogaloo movement will become the handle or the term that will cover this pretty disparate group. So watch out for Boogaloo.
Boogaloo indeed. Now, Dr. Stephen, during these tense times we find ourselves in globally, unprecedented times with COVID-19, journalists that challenge governments are getting a hard time. Your take on this issue?
Yes, we are very sympathetic to journalists and academics, and they work very closely together in their respective spheres. And we note that journalists are criticized when they criticize their governments. Well, that's the job of journalists, and to some extent academics, is to bring out the facts, and sometimes the facts are not pretty, and they do show malfeasance by governments on curbing the pandemic, for example, and many other things as well. Well, in Egypt, this caught my eye. In Egypt, a journalist has just been arrested by the government of General President al-Sisi. He has been reporting in an independent Egyptian daily newspaper, and he has been called as financing a terrorist group and spreading fake news that threatens national security. Well, what he did was simply point out the government's control of the virus was lacking, was faulty. So this got me interested in having another look at what's the status around the world, and I found in the Journalists Without Borders website, already this year, 10 journalists have been killed in the line of duty, some of them murdered by their governments or by extremist organizations, or had accidents in the course of trying to report on the front lines of the world news. So it is a somewhat difficult area. I think we have to give tribute to those who are close to the danger, who are reporting honestly and keeping us, the ordinary people, informed about what's happening in the fight against the virus, in terrorist activities, in other problems around the world.
But the principle of free press alive and well in the Pacifica region, would you say, Dr. Stephen?
Well, yes and no. There is a tabulation of press freedom, a World Press Freedom Index, and it puts New Zealand very high at number 9 in the world, along with the Scandinavian countries, where it normally sits, and the Netherlands. Australia is number 26. The United States is 45th. This is out of about 180. Papua New Guinea sits at 46th. Tonga sits at 50th. And Fiji sits at 52nd. And down at the bottom, there's Russia at 149th, Egypt at 166th, China at 177th, just almost at the very bottom. So the Pacific Island states, the three that we do have information about, I think we can put Cook Islands in this group as well, are in the top quarter. They're in the top. So this is not bad going in a list that includes the countries such as Russia and China and, of course, North Korea, with abysmal records of supporting free journalism or honest journalism. So I would give the Pacific Island states a pretty high mark, and it's improving all the time. We know that although there are some restrictions in Fiji, we've come a long way since the days of the dictatorship, and we know other countries in the Pacific Islands and supported by journalists in New Zealand and Australia are doing the job that good professionals should be doing. So I would say that the news is pretty good in this part of the world compared to other parts of the world in which the news for journalists is not very good.
A big thank you, Dr. Stephen Hoadley, Associate Professor of Politics and International Relations at the University of Auckland's Faculty of Arts. Always great to speak with you, Dr. Stephen. We'll look forward to your company again next Wednesday morning. Thank you so much and have a great week. Thank you.